entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
Good evening. This is Attorney Matthew Noyce, and I'm one of the partners at the law firm of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce, the oldest personal injury law firm in Tampa Bay. We have proudly helped people after car accidents, slip and falls, workers' compensation claims, and even Social Security disability claims since 1955. We are proud to give back to the community by hosting this show, and it's FLA Law on the radio. This is more than a year that we've been doing it now. I looked back on my Facebook post and I saw that this year, this day in history, it was a little more than a year that we started this show. So this is a live legal call-in talk show. I am here to answer questions you have regarding personal injury, workers' compensation, auto accidents, auto insurance, or any of those types of matters. But I'm not here by myself, fortunately. Otherwise, you have to listen to me talk for a whole hour. I have been blessed to have my friend and colleague, Michelle Perez, here as well. Michelle, thank you for coming again this week to FLA Law on the Radio.
Glad to be here.
Why don't you reintroduce yourself to our old listeners and introduce yourself to our new listeners.
Okay, awesome. My name is Michelle Perez. I'm an immigration attorney. I have a husband and three little girls.
Beautiful little girls they are. Your husband's
so
not
cute.
Too bad either.
Yeah,
so.
He's a keeper. He's a keeper. So I've been an attorney for almost 9 years now, and just recently I started my own firm with a business partner.
That's wonderful. We were talking about that before the show and yes. Talking about the joys of being a business owner and starting from scratch and dealing with vendors and websites and all that fun stuff.
Yes, it's so much fun.
So even more thank you for taking a break from all that and coming to FLA Law on the Radio for the next hour.
Of course, it's fun.
Yeah, and so again, this is a live call-in show. The number to call us is 727-441-3000. We welcome calls early in the show because sometimes the calls start coming in at the end of the show and we just don't have time to answer them on the air. So again, it's 727-441-3000. But we're not just on the radio. We are also on Facebook. So if you rather watch us on Facebook and type in your question that way, that's perfectly fine. The Facebook page is the law firm's Facebook page. It's Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce Injury Lawyers. And we are live on video now, so type in your question and ask us your questions there. We are also on the firm's YouTube channel, so you can get a different view of us on the YouTube channel as well. But really, the best way to do it is by calling us at 441-3000. So, Michelle, you did say that you're an immigration attorney.
Yes.
That means something different to everybody.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what types of cases you do handle?
Yeah, sure. So I like to explain to clients like there's two immigration worlds out there. And an attorney either does the business immigration visas or they do the family side, the family petitions, removal defense, appeals, citizenship. So what I do is I do the humanitarian side, the family side. So I handle different humanitarian visas, paroles, removal defense, citizenship. I handle those types.
Oh, okay. Okay. And why did you choose immigration law?
Oh, it's a long story. So I am the daughter of immigrants, and my parents came from Dominican Republic when they were very little, and they came with their residency.
Okay.
But my dad had some issues because he wasn't such a great boy when he was a young teenager.
We're fortunate that they didn't rub off on you because you're an angel.
Yeah, so I actually had to help my father stay in the country. And I found that out when I was in law school that he had some issues, and that's why he never traveled outside of the U.S.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that story. Mm-hmm. So you helped them when you were still in law school?
I helped them literally a couple years ago because we I told my dad, I was like, I need to be the best attorney for you.
Oh, okay.
So give me some time in the field because it's a very complicated case. And I said, give me some time in the field so I can learn my craft and be able to like properly represent you how I want to. So I did that.
Great. And I think from our last one of our shows, you did some immigration work while you were in law school too, though, right?
Yes.
Were you in, like, in a clinic?
Yeah. Okay. I was in the law school I went to is FIU in Miami, and uh-huh. they have an immigration clinic that offers pro bono services to clients.
So you got to learn a little bit while learning a lot of it in school as well.
Yes. Yeah. It was a great experience.
The hands-on learning is always the best learning. So those clinics are really good.
The clinics are the best.
Yeah. Now, we know why you got into immigration law now, but I know one of your first experiences in the law field, and those who have faithfully listened to us may know as well, but why don't you tell our listeners how you got into the law field, or what was one of your first jobs at the law in the law field?
It was at Perenick and Carroll.
It was Perenick and Carroll at that time.
Yeah, it was Perenick and Carroll at that time. I told your receptionist the other day, it was almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
And she goes, what? You don't look that old. And I'm like, thanks. But I was 16 years old, and I was in high school, and I had internship. I was a senior, and I was like, I want to work at a law firm. And I forgot if it was my math teacher or somebody connected me to Perenick and Caulfield at the time or Perenick and Carroll at the time, now Perenick and Caulfield. And that's when I started working for you guys.
Wow, and you were a wonderful receptionist for a long period of time.
For like 3 years, off and on, full time. And then when I would come back in the summers, I would come and be like a law clerk, and help you close files out.
Yes. We are very proud of how successful you are now, opening up your own law practice now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your law practice? I know it's brand new.
Brand new.
But that doesn't mean you're a brand new attorney.
No.
No.
At all.
So your brand new law firm is called?
It's called Saavedra and Perez Law.
That's why I had her say it, not me.
Yes. Yes. And I opened it up with my business partner. We worked together at the last firm that I was at for 3 years. And we became really close friends and colleagues. And we kind of decided in the fall that, you know, we want to do things our own way.
Yes.
I feel like we have a personal touch because we understand the client. She was undocumented for 10 years. She didn't become a resident of the United States until she was like 20, 21 years old. And I am a child of immigrants, and I know how it feels to have that fear that your loved one might be deported. So I feel like we come with like two different perspectives. So we combine that and created our own law firm, just focused on like client care and client based and understanding where the client's coming from.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And the benefit of being an immigration attorney is that you're not limited to just helping people in Tampa Bay or Miami. You can help people nationwide.
Yes.
Because it's federal law, correct?
It is. Yeah. My partner's actually in Virginia.
Okay.
So we already have a few clients now, and they're Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that's wonderful.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, may the wrinkles of opening up a practice be ironed out soon.
Yes.
So you can focus all your energy on helping the people that need it.
Yes.
So that's good. If people needed to contact you after 6 o'clock today, because we know what they can do to contact you at 6 o'clock until 6 o'clock today.
Right.
But if they wanted to contact you tomorrow, talk about immigration, how can they reach you?
They can definitely call our office. We have a phone number. It's 571-583-0791. Or honestly, they can email me. I'm open to emails too.
Okay.
Michelle.com. Perez at SaavedraPerez.com, and Saavedra is SaavedraPerez.com.
And Michelle's two L's, not
Michelle
just one.
Michelle is two L's, yes.
Yes, I have a sister who's Michelle, who's one L, so yeah. I always have to compare that. Yeah. And then Melissa is another one that I
That's
always have to do it to two S's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. So if you need to reach a Michelle Perez after 6 o'clock,
right.
You can email her, you can touch base with her on telephone. But if you have questions tonight, give us a call tonight at 727-441-3000. Even if the question doesn't have to do with immigration, both Michelle and I went to law school. We can probably tackle just about any legal question, at least give you a direction where to go if we don't know the actual answer to that. But if you also have questions regarding personal injury, workers' comp, or Social Security disability, that's what I've been doing for, about 35 years now. And so I'm happy to help in any way and answer any questions that you have regarding that as well. So give us a call now. It's 441-3000. But Michelle, I understand, there's really two types of visas when we're depending on how long the non-citizen wants to stay in the United States. Can you explain the difference between a visa for those who want to stay just for a short period of time and those who want to maybe make it a permanent resident status?
Yeah. So on the family side, on the business side, there's a whole bunch of different business type non-immigrant visas where they could stay for a period of time for employment opportunities.
Okay.
Some of those visas turn into residencies if that person so wishes, or it could just be for a temporary period. On the family side and tourism side, there is a B2 visa where you can come up to 6 months at a time for tourist purposes.
Okay.
Not for employment, but just to come and visit and spend money.
Okay. Yeah, we want that.
Yeah. No, you do not want to, what they call, have a dual intent, where you come in here to visit and work because you might get declined the next time you try to renew your visa, if they ever find out.
Okay. What about education? We hear a lot of people coming for education from foreign countries.
Yeah.
Do they need a visa for that as well?
There's a special visa for that. It's called a student visa. Those are usually handled with the specific university. And they hire. I'm sure they hire out, but that's more on the business side.
Okay. And those are usually just for educational purposes.
Yes.
It's not for working or permanent residency or anything like that.
Yes. You have to be careful.
The same dangers that are applied, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You've been doing immigration for a while now.
Yeah.
Is becoming a U.S. citizen through naturalization the ultimate goal of many of your clients?
It should be, and that's what I press hard on.
Okay. Why is that?
You're safest when you're a U.S. citizen. They can't deport a U.S. citizen. They can only try to denaturalize a U.S. citizen if there were any issues in the past that weren't brought to light during the interviewing process, or maybe they lied on their application. But yes, the citizenship is the safest route. You'll essentially never have to deal with immigration except for them being nice to you.
Right. And when we say they become a citizen, is that that's through naturalization, is that right?
Right?
That's a naturalization process?
Right.
And what are the general requirements for naturalization?
You have to be a resident normally for 5 years. If you're married to a U.S. citizen, though, you can become a citizen after 3 years.
Oh, okay.
You just have to show that you're still married to that person. It's a bona fide marriage. It's a real marriage. And you have the other qualifications, like good moral character. You have to have a certain presence in the United States, so you can't, be half in, half out. They want to see your that you have presence here, you file taxes, and then you have to pass their civics exam.
All right.
Yeah, fun. I was just testing my father the other day.
Oh, goodness.
On the civics
exam. Did you know
exam.
The answers, though?
There are some that I didn't know the answers to, which was funny, but I made fun of him because he's older than 65, so they have a condensed version. So out of the 100 questions, there's only 20 that he needs to memorize, and so he was like, he was like, in like, oh, I'm not that old. I can remember all. I'm like, no, take advantage. They're not going to ask you the rest of the questions.
Yeah. So, wow. I know. I wanted to print out that test.
It's long.
my son is taking, well, American government right now. He's a senior at Clara Central Catholic. The test seems to look like the civics test that the naturalization people may do.
Yeah, so, that's funny.
Yeah. So, and then I also, did I read that they have to also read, write, and speak English?
Yes.
At least
yes.
A little bit?
Yes. If you're older than 65 and you've been a resident for more than 20 years, you can do it in your native language.
Oh, okay.
That's a caveat. But yes, you have to understand English. And I've had a lot of Spanish-speaking clients where they have broken English. And sometimes I've set them up with professors or teachers outside, like a third party, to help them pass the naturalization.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. good. Well, I do see that we did get a Facebook message, and I'm going to let Michelle peek over here to see what it really is.
Hearts.
Yes. I wasn't going to say. I was going to make our listeners go to our Facebook page at Parent at Caulfield, Averland Noyce, Injury Lawyers, to see what Richard posted about you. I don't think they were for me. I think they were
for
you.
I don't think they were for you. They were for me.
But, yeah. So, if you have questions and you don't want to have your question on the radio, that's the way to go. Just jump onto Facebook and go to Perrin at Caulfield Averland Noyce Injury Lawyers Facebook page. Type in your comment or your question there. We're looking at it right here, and we're happy to do that. You can even see Michelle and I live in the studios here as well. So this is the time to get your questions answered, and we are happy to do it. We lawyers can talk forever.
We can.
But it's always better to have questions answered so we know exactly what our listeners really need to, what they're really looking for in terms of their areas of law and what questions they have. But we kind of talked about, you know, the benefit of becoming a U.S. citizen. As a U.S. citizen, I can,
yeah.
It's easy for me, you know, I am a very proud American, you know,
yes.
I love the country. I think it's the best country in the whole world, and I hope everybody else thinks that too. But there are benefits of becoming a U.S. citizen if you're an immigrant. Can we just touch base on, except for the whole pride thing about it all, you know, what is some of the benefits of becoming a U.S. citizen and supposed to staying as a permanent resident? Is
right.
that what it would be?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
You're learning
a lot
with these.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I know the big one, especially this election year, is the right to vote. It is so important to get involved in who your next president is, your senators, your house. But elections are coming up in November. And for some jurisdictions, there's the ability to apply now and be able to be sworn in before elections. And so you'll be able to vote for the next president, which is pretty cool if you look at.
So if you're a permanent resident, you can't vote?
No, you can't vote.
What happens if you do?
You will get deported.
Okay.
Don't do it.
Yes, that's what I thought. I thought that was the answer.
Yeah, don't do it. Mm. Oh, my gosh.
I thought there's also another benefit, because then as a U.S. citizen,
mm-hmm.
you can bring in, or you can at least petition to bring in other family members that you otherwise wouldn't be able to if you were a permanent resident.
Right.
Can you explain that a little bit?
For U.S. citizens, they have more categories, I would call it. So you'd be able to petition your brother, your spouse, your mother, minor kids, adult kids. That's basically all. You can't petition your cousin or your grandmother, but what they call like more of your close family members versus residents. There's a shorter list.
So that's one of the benefits of becoming a U.S. citizen. You mm-hmm. can bring in family members to also become permanent residents and eventually U.S. citizens as well.
Yes.
And then I'm certain that people are fearful of losing their permanent resident status,
mm-hmm.
That they become a U.S. citizen. Is that relieve them of that concern of being worried about being deported, even though they were a green card holder for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I actually just had this conversation with one of my employees this morning. She lives outside the country, and she, at one point in time, was a lawful permanent resident, and she abandoned her status because she went back to her country and just never came back. So after a certain amount of years, if you don't come back, you automatically lose your residency. The benefit of becoming a citizen is, like, if you want to retire in another country, you don't have to worry about not ever coming, being able to come back to the U.S.
Right. And isn't it also true that if someone that has a permanent resident card, if they travel outside of the U.S., and they want to come back, you know, even if they just traveled for vacation, they run a risk of not being accepted back into the country. Is that
they
right?
They do. Every resident that travels outside that wants to come back in, they're subject to being checked by the Customs and Border Patrol. And if there's any issues, whether background, whatever they're bringing in, it could be anything that they find in your history. Maybe you've lied to a officer in the past, and it could have been like 30 years ago. They can try to deport you.
Wow. So it's another reason why you want to become a citizen.
Become a citizen quick.
That is good.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this question. You know, this is not a political show, but immigration is big in the news.
Yes.
You know, can't run from it. Yeah, every day there's something talked about immigration and the procedures and the policies and such like that. You know, although this is not a political talk show, and I don't want to convert it into a political talk show, I do think that our listeners want to know that there is a right way to come into the United States, and there is a wrong way to come into the United States. You eat, sleep, and drink this, and I fortunately don't have to. But can you tell our listeners, you know, as an immigration attorney, as somebody who helps these immigrants, what's the right way for them to, you know, come into the country, and whether it become a permanent resident or become a U.S. citizen, whichever their decision is, what's the right way to do that?
I would say the best way would be to either request a visa through the local U.S. consulate, or if they're in dire need, to present themselves at the border. And there's different things that they can say at the border. I'm requesting asylum. I'm requesting humanitarian parole are the two biggest ones that you can request for, like, immediate assistance. And that way you don't have this bad, I don't know what to call it, but this bad
stigma
or cloud over your head, where you entered without inspection is what we call it, where you entered the U.S. trying to sneak in undetected, because there are consequences for that later down the road. If you try to adjust, you have to ask for specific waivers or permissions. And some of those waivers, you have to travel outside and then come back in.
Okay.
So they make you do it right.
So the first way is that they apply for a visa in their home country.
Right.
How long of a process is that? Or how long can it be? I know there's no easy.
I know. There's so many that there's such a backlog right now. And that's why.
Is it a backlog in the United States or a backlog in the
The U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, the U.S. and processing visas, and depending on which country, you know, there's different backlogs for every country. But there's such a huge backlog right now because, I mean, there's just so many applications, not enough officers.
Sure.
And that's one of the reasons that the actual government filing fees are increasing starting April 1st.
Oh, okay.
They haven't increased since I became an attorney.
Really?
Yeah. So before then, I don't know when they increased, but it's been over 10 years.
So what is the fee right now?
For different applications, there are different fees. Okay. Some applications are going up like 200%.
Oh, wow.
Some are going up by like $50, but there is a specific one that's very, very popular that we do a lot, and there it's adjustment of status with a marriage for marriage to a U.S. citizen. It's starts at right now it's $1,075, and it's going to be $3,065.
Wow!
Yes, so that was a huge jump.
Yes,
those are one of the ones that definitely are you're going to be significantly impacted.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And all right. And so the other right way or best way to do it is also go to the border and ask for asylum.
Yes, or humanitarian parole.
Is that what we hear in the news with people that go and then they get a court date or
right.
whatever that may
yeah,
be?
Yeah, some of them get paroled in, and so they get taken in, get detained, get processed, and get released to a family that's in the United States. Some of them, you know, during a special program, they were being asked to wait in Mexico, and that was a huge issue for a while. But normally, yes, they bring them in if there's no security risk, and they release them if they verify their identity, that they are, in fact, the person that they say they are, and they release them to family members within the United States.
What if they don't have family members in the United States?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think they have to have some sort of sponsorship in a way for someone to say, like, I'll take care of them.
Okay. I mean, because we've seen the buses going to different cities and such like that. Not because they have family there. They just get...
It might. Okay. Some of them might be because they have family and they've requested to go to New York or Miami or different cities.
Okay.
Some of them are just like, oh, I want to go to New York because everyone hears about New York City.
Yes.
And just get bused there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the not best way to go is kind of like what we talked about.
Yes.
You know,
entering
the without sneaking
inspection.
In. You said it much politically correct than I would have said it. Entering without inspection.
Yes. Entering without inspection.
And those are also known as the getaways or the gotaways or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And that has serious repercussions on that person.
Right.
And really that person's family, right?
Yes.
Why is that?
If you do enter without inspection, you have less ability to adjust in the United States. And also, what we've been seeing a lot is a lot of these, what they call coyotes, which are those assistants that help them come into the country, these people. They're a part of cartels. They're bad people.
Yeah.
And they do bad things to our clients. And they've mentally, physically hurt them, verbally kidnapped them, held them prisoner in some house in Texas or Arizona. So it's dangerous as well.
Wow.
But if you do find yourself in that situation,
I was going to ask you that. I know how nice you are, how kind you are, and so I know that there's a way to help those abused by, you know, whether it's the
coyotes,
cartels, or even employers.
And employers,
Employers or even caretakers.
Take advantage of people.
How can somebody who, you know, is here undocumented, how can they get help if they're fearful of being deported if they report?
Right. There's special visas, which we call humanitarian visas, and there's three specific ones for victims. One's a T visa, one's a U visa, and one's a VAWA. The T visa is the popular coyote abusing, labor abuse, domestic violence abuse from a partner that may not be a spouse, that maybe has no status, or even abuse from family members. And it has to do with, T stands for trafficking.
Okay.
Or in other words, involuntary servitude. So their trafficker, whoever that may be, is requiring them to do some servitude work involuntarily out of fear and coercion. So we have to prove a lot of elements for a T visa, but the popular ones are labor violations, just working and being afraid that they're going to call immigration, being verbally abused, not getting paid on time, continuing to work with the promise of pay, being taken advantage of because they know their status, because they don't have legal authorization to work, so they're getting these jobs that will just take them, and committing labor violations.
Right.
So that's a very popular one. Also, the smuggling, coyote. If the smuggling and the incidents happen in the United States, that's where we can file for a T visa based on smuggling. And those, there's specific requirements, but that has to do with like verbal abuse and involuntary servitude and kind of just a lot of abuse from those smuggling them in.
And what protection do they have if they're granted a T visa that they would otherwise not have?
So they would have a T visa for 3 years, and then they could apply for residency, which is great.
Right.
That's your golden ticket.
That's what they want, yes.
Yeah, well, U.S. citizenship is the golden ticket.
Yes. And we talk about resident card and such like that, and I learned something the first time you came.
Yes, you did.
And a resident card is really the formal name or the proper name for a green card.
Yes.
All right. So can you explain to our listeners what the green card is?
Yes.
or isn't in reality, I guess.
It isn't green anymore. That's okay. What it isn't. But it used to be green, I think, in like the 1940s when they started making the green card. It's basically proof that you're a resident of the United States and you have permission to stay here and, you know, travel outside and come back in. But it's not green anymore. It hasn't been green for a while. I think they brought the green in a little bit in the 1980s and then was like, eh, and took it out.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's what a green card is.
All right. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the TV, so you can eventually get a green card or
yes.
a residence card. But there's the other two types of visas
yeah.
that you utilize to help people that are victims of other people.
Right.
Can you explain to our listeners?
Sure.
This is Michelle. Before I let you go, it's Michelle Perez. She's an immigration attorney here, in Palm Harbor, but all nationwide as well. So we have the benefit of getting answers from her regarding immigration for the next 22 minutes or so. And so if you have questions, call us at 441-3000. And so, Michelle, I'm sorry, tell us about the other visa that helps people that are victims of manipulation, so to speak.
Yeah. So a popular one is a U visa. And for a U visa, you must be a victim of a qualifying crime here in the United States. And you have to have assisted the police in an investigation of your perpetrator.
Okay.
So usually it's like physical assault, serious, you know, attempted murder, or we've had robbery, burglaries with some physical element to it, and we've gotten U visas for those people.
How is that different with the domestic violence of the T visa? Are they close to the same?
They're similar, but with the T visa domestic violence, you don't have to show proof that you called the police.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's, in my opinion, easier to get a T visa based on domestic violence because you don't have to prove you called the police or insisted in persecution of the perpetrator. You just have to tell your story, basically.
Well, that makes sense because I can imagine that the undocumented
don't really call
person
the police.
Don't want to call the police. Mm-hmm. They're afraid.
No.
I mean, and they're told to be afraid.
Right.
You know,
right.
So.
Rightfully so.
Right.
But that's the U visa.
Okay.
And VAWA is specifically made for family members of spouses who are U.S. citizens or permanent residents, or who are parents of U.S. citizen children over 21, or who are children under the age of 24, and their parent is a United States citizen or lawful permanent resident. And that those family members have abused them in some sort of way. So battery or extreme hardship or extreme cruelty is what we call it.
Okay.
Extreme cruelty just means like mental abuse. If they've been abused mentally by their family member who has status.
And so then they can get the I'm going to say it wrong.
VAWA.
VAWA. The VAWA visa as well. And then, again, start the process of getting a permanent resident and then going through naturalization, becoming an American citizen.
Exactly. The caveat with VAWAs, though, you don't have to wait 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Once you get VAWA approval, you can apply for citizenship.
Wow.
And I usually do it concurrently. So once the VAWA is approved, you're just waiting for your interview for your residency.
That's interesting. Well, they've been through enough. So
Yeah.
It does look like we do have a question on Facebook. The question, I think, is for a little bit of both of us. Does your residence or immigration status impact whether you can obtain work comp benefits if you are hurt at work?
I think that's your question.
I'll take that question, yes. We do see that a lot, Jackie. Thank you for the question. We do see that a lot in workers' comp. The Florida law says that an undocumented worker is still entitled to workers' comp benefits.
That's great.
However,
there
are a few problems. Mm. If they use a fake Social Security number on a document to get workers' comp benefits, they can be excluded from workers' comp benefits.
Oh.
If they used a fake Social Security number to get employment, they don't necessarily lose the entitlement to workers' comp benefits. It's only when they go in front of the court with a false Social Security number could they lose their right to workers' comp benefits. So so there is a way that if I've represented few undocumented workers who do get hurt, and there's a request not for a Social Security number but a request for an identification number that you use for the workers' comp benefits, because a lot of the workers' comp system is based on Social Security numbers. And so if you use the fake one, then you run the risk of not being entitled to workers' comp benefits.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So to get the job, they're not going to penalize you because, and I don't know this to be the basis behind it, but some of the employers know that they don't have the real Social Security number. Mm-hmm. They still hire them anyhow.
Yep.
But then when it comes to getting the workers' comp benefits, you don't want to misrepresent to the court your legal status.
Right.
So Jackie, I hope that was helpful to you, and thank you for the email.
the comment,
the Facebook message. You know, and so again, we have about 17 minutes left in the show for this week. Our number is 441-3000. I am Matt Noyce. I'm one of the partners at the law firm of Perenick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce, the personal injury law firm that has been helping people since 1955. This is called FLA Law on the radio because many, many years ago, we used to do FLA Law on the TV. And we would have a live call-in TV show that we did four nights a week, two up in Pasco and two up in Pinellas. That we would do the same type of format. We would get very smart attorneys like you, Michelle, in other areas of law, and they would be our guest on the television, and we would answer the questions on TV.
I don't think I knew that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and you never knew who could be calling on those
live
TV shows. Yes. And it was live, and I've had defense attorneys call asking questions on cases that we were working on just to razz me a little bit. But
how fun.
So we always, and that was very good. The community really loved that. And so that when we had this opportunity last year to do FLA Law on the radio, we thought that would be the best thing to do as well. Because you can't do live TV anymore for some reason.
Yeah.
Everything is taped. And it's kind of hard to take calls on a tape show.
On a tape show.
So if you have questions regarding personal injury, workers' comp, or Social Security disability, I'm here for you for the next 16 minutes. And Michelle Perez is here for you for any immigration questions that you may have. And both of us are here for any other questions that you may have regarding any areas of the law. But let's get back to immigration if we can. It is spring break. Yes. Spring break in Florida. You can see the traffic in the road. And so how about a scenario for this scenario for you? Let's say someone is a citizen and meets a very pretty girl from England.
Right.
And they spend some time on Clearwater Beach, and one thing leads to another, and they end up proposing marriage to her. That's sweet. How can he get her back to America for the wedding? Can he get her back first?
He can. He has two options if he really wanted to. Coming from England, they have a special visa where they can enter and exit as they wish with some caveats, okay? And don't quote me on it because I haven't dealt with England clients in a long time. But they have a special visa. So he can actually get married here in Clearwater, and she can, as long as she returns back to England, they can process... Well, there's two types of visas, right? There's a spousal visa. So if they're already married, he can petition on a spousal petition. If he wants her to move here first and feel her out for 90 days and then marry her, he'll do a K-1 fiancé visa.
Okay.
So he can do one of the two.
So the K-1 fiancé, you said 90 days. Is that a prerequisite there that they have to get married within the 90 days?
You have to get married within 90 days, but essentially you can get married the day after that person arrives.
Okay. They can't say, okay, let's say we get married and then extend that engagement for a year or 2 years.
Right, no. All right. Then you have to file the proper paperwork so that they can stay in the country.
What about marriage? I mean, does getting married to a U.S. citizen automatically... make you entitled to a green card?
No, they still have to look at your history and see if there's any other concerns that maybe something happened in the past, maybe a violation of a visa in the past, or some misrepresentation or lies or criminal issues in your past. You still have to go through that same process that everyone else does, just to make sure you're a person of good moral character to be able to become a resident of the United States.
Is there a marriage duration requirement? Do they have to be married a certain amount of time? Or again, if a person meets all those qualifications and then marries somebody and is married for one day or a month, are they able to become a green card holder, a permanent resident, because they got married?
That's a good question. If you come on a K-1 and you apply for residency, you will get what they call a conditional residency, which is good for 2 years. Before your 2-year anniversary, you have to apply for your permanent resident card, which they call the 10-year green card that you just have to renew every 10 years. And you have to show that if you're still married, both you and your spouse have to sign that petition for your permanent residency. If at that point you're separated or divorced, then they look intensely at your history and say, hey, show us. Show us that this marriage was real, and we're going to do the re-interview of your relationship to make sure that it was a valid marriage and a valid relationship. So you get into a little bit more of a deep dive into your history if you've divorced or you're separated.
Okay. And we just touched base on the permanent residence card. Mm-hmm. It's good for how
10
long?
10 years.
10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Automatically 10 years. Is it the first one for
the
temporaries for 3 years and then
conditionals for 2 years?
Okay.
And then you can apply for your 10-year. That's only if you've been married for less than 2 years.
Okay.
Which is the case on a K-1 visa because you're a fiance at that point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What about, let's take marriage out of it and just have a permanent
family petition.
Yeah. The green card's good for 10 years?
Yeah. Normal green card, 10 years.
Okay.
I think immigration is what they're doing is focusing on the marriages because there's been so much fraud in the past.
That's what,
you know.
That's what you hear about often, you know. Hey, we got married just so she can become he can become an American citizen.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. But just because the green card's good for 10 years doesn't mean you're safe, right?
No, never.
You know, what could happen to make them revoke your green card? What would you have to do to make them revoke your green card?
There's a few things that could happen. I think the most common one would be crimes. And there was one client I had maybe about 5 years ago, and this can happen to anybody. He was charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Wow.
And that's because he got into a car accident. He ran a red light and hit someone else, and that person died.
Okay.
So he got placed into deportation proceedings. And
because of a car accident.
Because of a car accident. Wow. And someone dying. And so, and this was 3 days before Christmas, he was arrested. Wow. And detained without bond. And we were able to get him on bond 2 days, like the day before Christmas. I remember specifically because I was like so excited that he was able to be home for Christmas. But we had a long battle in immigration court for a year, and we won on a technicality that it was involuntary manslaughter, but there was no, I forgot what legal term we used, but there was like no physical act on his part that was violent to make it a serious crime for them, for it to be then deported.
Okay.
Based on the Florida statute. So we got off on a technicality because of how Florida statute is programmed, but that might not be the case for every state.
Right. No, that's right. And so that's the fear that people have, even with a green card, that, you know, if a car accident can lead to deportation, it's even more important to march forward and try to get that naturalization so you can become an American citizen, then you won't have that. You'll still have consequences for the car accident, but you won't have deportation consequences for the car accident.
Exactly.
What other ways can offenses can result to deportation? Trying to smuggle or try to help somebody that's not supposed to come? Is that a way?
Helping others enter illegally. And a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of people, but there's some people that do it just to try to bring their families in. But it will have huge consequences. It's one of the most, if you get convicted in criminal court for this, there's no waiver, unless it was immediate family member, like spouse or whatnot. But they call it an aggravated felony, and there is no waiver for this. I had one client a couple of years ago where I do something in my, especially now in my own firm, is where I do criminal consultations. So I will review your history to see if, depending on your criminal history, like some people are afraid to apply for a residency or afraid to apply for citizenship. So I review your criminal history and I do a deep legal analysis to see if it's going to be an immigration issue. And so for this one lady, I did that. She was federally charged with smuggling, but it was assisting an undocumented, a foreign national, enter the United States. But all she did was go to Walmart, pick up this person, and drop her off at someone else's house from the orders of an aunt or a friend that said, hey, can you help me out? But what she didn't know was the police were following her and watching her, and they ended up arresting her and charged her with assisting and abetting alien smuggling just for picking someone up from Walmart and dropping them off.
Wow.
So when I did my criminal analysis, I was like, this is going to be considered an aggravated felon, and they're going to deny any sort of relief for you. So I would not touch your case. I wouldn't suggest you do anything to your case right now, and just lay low. Essentially is what I told her.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge one, and you just don't know.
Right.
Because of everything that can happen.
Wow. Yeah. So it's so fearful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you are not an American citizen, that there's so many things that could happen that could put your residency in jeopardy.
Right.
Looks like we do have another Facebook message. And this is outside of the humanitarian visa, but maybe you can shed a little bit of light on this. The question is, how hard is it for a person from another country to gain residency status to open up a business such as a French restaurant or a French bakery?
So first you start off with a non-immigrant business visa, and there's so many different types of visas.
Non-immigrant
employment-based visa.
Okay.
That visa allows you to temporarily enter the United States and open up a business or continue a business. After a certain amount of years, then you can apply for residency. But I am not your business visa expert.
Right.
That is a whole nother world where you want an attorney specifically that knows about that. I do have a good friend in Texas, and she does do business visas.
Okay.
So I can give Lorraine that recommendation if she
wonderful.
Wants it.
That'd be wonderful. Mm-hmm. See, you know that there is a way,
mm-hmm.
and so that's very helpful to know that there is at least a way.
Yeah,
so
and they offer free consultations.
So we know that you're not a business immigration attorney as
yes.
much, but I started doing this little thing, so our view, I didn't tell you about this either.
No, you didn't. I'm wondering what you're going to do.
I'm stealing this idea from Doug and Kelly Kelly, who do the Kelly Kelly Show
mm-hmm.
on Mondays at 5 to 6.
Oh, gosh.
Where they do this little thing that I thought was pretty interesting. It lets our listeners know a little bit more about you.
Okay.
In a less legal way.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go over the two choices.
Okay.
And you just tell me which choice fits you, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Interesting.
It's called this or that.
Okay.
Ah, right.
Okay.
All right. Dog or cat?
Can I say neither?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
And I would support you 100% with that answer.
Okay.
How about cookies or brownies?
Cookies.
All right.
For sure.
Music stations or talk radio stations?
Music stations.
All right.
That's a hard one, though.
This one I thought was pretty interesting. Sauce on the side or sauce on top?
Sauce on the side. Because if it gets too mushy by the time your food gets to you, then you're like, man, I wish it was on the side so I can dip as much as I want or as little.
Spoken like a true mother of young
yes,
children.
Yes, yes.
Miami or Palm Harbor?
10 years ago, I would have said Miami. Now, with a family and a husband and three little kids, I say Palm Harbor.
Smart.
Yeah.
Shopping online or shopping in stores?
Online, all the way.
Oh, goodness. Okay. structured plans or surprises?
Structured.
Yeah, okay.
Structured girl.
All right. Books or movies?
Movies.
Okay,
I feel like I read too many books with legal,
okay.
legal stuff
right.
that I'm like, give me something visual.
All right. Well, good. I thought books was for you. So I was right for most of them so
okay.
far.
Okay.
Android or iPhone?
iPhone.
Yeah.
My husband would not agree with me. So he's an Android, but I am an iPhone.
Oh, goodness. I think knowing what you're going through now, I think mm-hmm. I know the answer to this
yes.
one.
Yes.
Early riser or night owl?
Early riser.
I was going to say both, probably.
I mean, yes, but the night, I'm like, I need sleep by that time. I wake
okay.
up at 5 o'clock
just
so I can get some quiet time for mom and business owner before it gets to the craziness.
When
yeah.
do the kids usually start waking up?
Well, the time change has been helpful.
Yes.
8:30.
Oh, okay.
But before that...
That wears off, though, just
yeah,
so
that,
you know.
That's going to wear off, but 7 o'clock normally.
Okay. And then I'm going to do one more because it's spring break.
Okay.
Vacation or staycation?
Staycation.
All right.
I really love those.
All right.
You don't have to pack.
All right. We just have a... few more seconds. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they need to get in touch with you?
Yes, for sure. So my name is Michelle Perez again, and our phone number is 571-583-0791, Saavedra and Perez Law.
And if you have any questions and need to reach her, you can always reach out to our firm, Perenick
yes.
Caulfield, Averill & Noyce. We thank you for listening this week. We encourage you to listen again next week. I'll be hosting the show, and I think I have a bankruptcy attorney on next week.
Fine.
So in the meantime, drive safely and watch out for those who don't. Take care. Good night.